This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of September 29th, 2005.
All right, freeze! Police!
Bad Cop No Donut!
Bad, 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 bad.
Cop, 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 cop.
No, 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 no. Donut, 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 donut.
Because I'm the law, and I rule.
With your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption, I'm Ron Anisich at CKLN in Toronto. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for a look at the case of William McDonald. McDonald's wife, Karen, is in prison for a crime her husband says she did not commit, assaulting him with a baseball bat in the couple's Oklahoma home. But first, a look at what the police did to us this week. A report released this week by Amnesty International says that police mistreatment of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities in the United States is widespread and goes mostly unchecked. The 150-page report looked at police in four U.S. cities and included information from hundreds of interviews. The report says that at times the mere perception that a person is lesbian or gay has provoked both verbal and physical attacks by police officers. The report suggests that the United States is not living up to its obligations to protect the rights of its citizens as required by international law. You can read the Amnesty International report on their website. Two LAPD officers and a Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputy have been charged with lying about an off-duty car crash where two of the three also threatened the driver of the other vehicle. The Associated Press reports that officers Isaac Lowe and Olga Villa and Deputy David Green were traveling in a vehicle together and became angry after their vehicle struck another from behind and the driver of the other vehicle demanded identification. The three all lied to police about who was driving their vehicle. Lowe and Green have been charged with making criminal threats, lying to a peace officer, and obstructing a peace officer. Villa is charged with lying to police and obstruction. The driver of the vehicle that they struck has filed a civil rights lawsuit against the officers and their departments. Police officers in Los Angeles say that they have observed police officers from four suburban police departments dropping off homeless people in the city's downtown core in the past year. According to the LA Times, officers from Burbank, Pasadena, El Segundo, and El Monte have been observed engaging in the practice, which has been a violation of their respective department policies for many years in most cases. All of the departments except Burbank responded to inquiries by stating that they were not aware of any specific incidents where homeless people were driven downtown and dropped off by their officers. All of the responding departments said that they would investigate any specific incidents which were reported to them. Last Tuesday, the San Diego Police Department revealed that one of their officers had been arrested and charged with embezzlement. KGTV reports that Gabriel Gutierrez faces three counts of embezzlement and three counts of using a computer to wrongfully obtain money. Gutierrez allegedly took three knives from the police property room where he worked and sold them on the internet. A Washington state trooper was fired in August for lying to a fellow officer. The King County Journal says that Officer Jason Crandall was observed by another officer exceeding the speed limit. When questioned, he lied to the other officer about where he was going. Crandall had previously been involved in six car accidents while on duty, one of which was fatal. A lawsuit surrounding the fatal accident was settled for $150,000. Crandall's driving record was not a factor in the decision to fire the officer. A police officer in Mason City, Iowa, was sentenced to 2 years in prison on Friday for sexual assault. The Mason City Globe-Gazette says that Officer Dan Mason was convicted earlier this year of assault with intent to commit sexual abuse after a December 2004 incident which occurred in the home of a 19-year-old woman. In imposing the 2-year sentence, the judge noted the officer's apparent lack of remorse. As part of his sentence, Mason is required to undergo sex offender treatment. Earlier this year, Mason was charged with two other sexual assaults and was subsequently fired from his job. Trials for the other charges will be held in November and December. A police officer in Indianapolis, Indiana, was charged with drinking and driving last Friday. WTHR says that Officer Michael Hill was driving at extremely high speeds before he was stopped by other officers. A test revealed that Hill had more than three times the legal limit of alcohol in his blood. Hill may face both criminal and internal charges. A special prosecutor has been assigned to investigate an allegation of misconduct against police officers in the West Lafayette, Indiana Police Department. WTHR reports that a police investigation was conducted last month after an anonymous complaint was sent to the city's mayor about the conduct of some police officers during a bus trip for city employees to a baseball game. The West Lafayette Department's chief has recommended sanctions against three police officers and a reprimand for a fourth. No details are available about the precise nature of the misconduct. A police officer in Oxford, Ohio, was charged with drinking and driving on Tuesday. WLWT reports that Officer Ryan Sikora was involved in a minor accident that caused about $600 worth of property damage. He refused to take a breathalyzer test when one was requested. Sikora has been charged with operating a motor vehicle under the influence of alcohol and failure to control a motor vehicle. He's been placed on administrative leave pending an internal investigation.
I was innocent and I almost became a criminal. My religion talks about forgiveness all the time, so I love forgiving.
In any other case, if this wasn't a police officer, this would not have been the outcome here.
A police officer in Toronto was sentenced to 30 days in prison on Friday after he was caught on videotape beating a Somali refugee. A Canadian press report says that Constable Roy Preston was convicted in July on the assault charge in connection with the August 2003 beating. The sentence was stayed by a judge yesterday, pending the outcome of an appeal of both the sentence and the conviction. The victim of the beating was charged with assaulting a police officer, but the charge was eventually dropped. Police reports from other officers present at the incident all mention that the victim of the beating struck the officer, but none mentioned that the officer struck or beat or kicked the man. Preston was to have been allowed to serve his sentence intermittently on weekends. A 72-year-old retired Manhattan Supreme Court judge was killed by a New York City police officer who was driving a motorcycle without a license last Thursday. The New York Post reports that the unnamed officer was driving a motorcycle which belonged to her boyfriend, who is also an NYPD officer.
This case brings double pain to this family, who sat through a trial. It ended with a 10-2 vote for guilty.
It's a bench trial, so a lot of the theatrics, I guess, of a jury trial are absent. But both positions are well set.
Whatever law applies to a killer, that's what she wants to be applied to this killer.
The retrial of a New York City police officer charged with manslaughter in the death of an African immigrant began on Monday. An Associated Press report says that Officer Brian Conroy shot his victim four times, claiming that the man made an attempt to grab his gun. The shooting occurred during a police raid of a Manhattan warehouse where two DVD counterfeiters were arrested. The dead man was not connected to that investigation and worked in the building repairing African art objects damaged during shipping. Prosecutors say that Officer Conroy failed to follow proper procedure and engaged in reckless conduct during the incident which led to the man's death. Conroy's previous trial ended in March when the jury deadlocked 10-2 in favor of conviction. The chief of police in Easton, Pennsylvania, resigned on Monday after being asked to by the city's mayor. The Associated Press reports that Chief Stephen Mazzeo presided over a particularly rocky period for the Easton Police. An officer was shot by another officer during a training exercise. Numerous lawsuits alleging police brutality have already cost the city millions of dollars. Rank-and-file officers who were opposed to the chief's proposed reforms are reportedly pleased with the news of his departure. A police officer in Charlotte, North Carolina, will not face criminal charges for shooting and killing a 67-year-old double amputee in a wheelchair. WXII reports that Officer Chris Kimball shot the man on May 10th after police were called by a family friend who asked officers to check in on the man. A sheriff's deputy in Greenville County, South Carolina, was arrested last Tuesday for beating his wife. According to an Associated Press report, police were called to the home of Deputy Joseph Garner by his wife. His wife claimed that Garner assaulted her. Garner's wife had visible injuries, which means that his arrest was mandatory. He was freed on a $2,000 bond the day after his arrest. An internal investigation was conducted and Garner was fired from his job. If convicted, he would not be able to work as a police officer again because he would be prevented from carrying a weapon. A captain in the Palm Beach County, Florida Sheriff's Department is facing charges this week after breaking into his ex-girlfriend's home. The South Florida Sun Sentinel says that Captain David Carhart has been charged with trespassing and criminal mischief. He's accused of breaking into his ex-girlfriend's home on July 31st. After breaking in, he called his ex-girlfriend, who is also a police officer, and left a message saying that he was drunk and inside of her home. She refused to go back home until she received another message that he had left. Carhart has been on administrative leave since the day after the break-in. A police officer in Auburn, Alabama, is accused of choking a man and threatening to kill him after he was handcuffed and under arrest. According to the Opelika Auburn News, a man filed a complaint against Officer Kenneth Frazier last Tuesday, 2 days after the alleged excessive force incident. The man says he was being taken to a police station by Frazier when he stopped his car, pulled the man from the back seat, and choked him for around 1 minute. The incident occurred right in front of another officer who had been following in a separate vehicle. The other officer did not intervene at any point during the attack. An investigation of the incident is currently underway. A police officer in Jackson, Mississippi, has been accused of sexually assaulting an 18-year-old. WLBT reports that Officer Johnny Tillman has been accused of forcing the teenager to perform oral sex on him. The teenager saved DNA evidence from the August 30th attack, and Tillman was arrested and is facing a charge of sexual battery. He's currently being held on bond. Tillman is also an alderman in the city of Goodman. A Mississippi Highway Patrol officer was sentenced last Thursday to 3 years of probation for violating the rights of a teenager during a 2003 traffic stop. An Associated Press report says that Officer John Smith pleaded guilty to the civil rights violation earlier this year. Smith admitted to forcing the teen to the ground, hitting the teen's face on the pavement in the process. He also tried to thwart an investigation by lying about the existence of a videotape of the incident from a camera in Smith's squad car. In addition to the probation, Smith must wear an electronic monitoring device for 1 year and must pay a $1,500 fine. As part of his plea deal, Smith has resigned from his job. A police officer in Topeka, Kansas, is facing 144 charges. The Topeka Capital Journal reports that Officer Bruce Voigt was arrested last Thursday, 1 week after his former partner was sentenced to 16 months in prison for stealing money from the police department. Voigt's charges include perjury, falsifying evidence, official misconduct, theft, and promoting obscenity. He is currently free on a $25,000 bond. A police officer in Lawton, Oklahoma, was charged last Wednesday in connection with a scam where officers were paid for security work which they did not perform. The Lawton Constitution reports that Officer Paul Stoner is charged with obtaining property by false pretense and is currently on administrative leave without pay, pending resolution of the charge. He's accused of defrauding Lawton public schools out of thousands of dollars in May and June. Stoner is the fourth Lawton police officer arrested in connection with the scam.
We are all upset. I'm not saying the police force didn't do their job, but I think they did it too well.
Based upon what I know at this point, my initial briefing, it appears that the less lethal weaponry was used in accordance with policy.
Keep in mind here that at this point, Mr. Lee is totally naked. He was sweating profusely and his body was very slippery, making it difficult for the officers to keep their hands on him to control him.
He comes outside, takes his shirt off, and is screaming at the cops, you know, I'm not going to harm you. I'm taking my shirt off to show you I don't have any weapons, you know.
Is that what people saying?
Yeah, people that were here at the show.
A man died on Monday after being shocked with a taser by police in Austin, Texas. A man in Nashville, Tennessee, died on Saturday, 2 days after he was shocked with tasers by police at least 8 times. A man died last Thursday after being shocked with a taser by Sacramento County, California sheriff's deputies. 2 students were shocked with a taser by police in Charlotte, North Carolina, in separate incidents this week. On Friday, a 14-year-old girl was shocked with one of the weapons during an altercation with a school administrator. On Monday, a 17-year-old boy at a different school was shocked after he was accused of slapping a vice principal who was talking to him about being late for school. An autopsy says that a taser was the cause of an in-custody death at the Lancaster County Detention Center in South Carolina. The death was attributed to cardiac arrhythmia, which was caused by an electric shock from a taser. A federal civil rights lawsuit has been filed by a mentally ill man in Chicago who was shocked with a taser multiple times by police in August. The man, who says he was attacked by officers as he left a neighbor's house, was never charged with a crime. Court documents released this week show that Taser International, makers of the weapon, gave thousands of company stock options to 6 police officers who promoted the use of the weapons in their police departments. The 6 officers who received the stock options between 2001 and 2003 are located in Arizona, California, Texas, Washington, and Canada. Of the 6, 5 are now employees of Taser International. Critics say that the practice is an obvious conflict of interest and that the appearance that the company may have paid police officers to promote their weapons was inappropriate. Chandler, Arizona police officer Jim Halstead was given 500 stock options 1 year before urging the Chandler City Council to purchase Tasers. Halstead is now a regional sales manager for the company. Victoria, British Columbia police officer Darren Lauer was given 750 stock options in 2001. Lauer helped write a 1999 report which advocated taser use by officers in Canada. The Victoria Police Department subsequently became the first department in Canada to arm its officers with tasers. An inquiry into taser by the United States Securities and Exchange Commission is a formal investigation as of this week, and the scope of the investigation has been expanded. The inquiry was already looking at claims made by the company regarding the safety of their products and a large taser order at the end of last year that appears suspicious because it appeared to inflate sales in order to meet existing projections. The SEC is now also looking at possible manipulation of Taser stock prices. This week, the cost of Taser shares dipped below the $7 mark for the first time in over a year, at times trading almost as low as $6 each. Other than the killings already reported in this week's program, police also killed people this week in Beverly Hills, California, Dayton, Ohio, Orlando, Florida, where police killed a fellow officer, and Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. William McDonald says his wife is in jail for a crime that she did not commit. McDonald was shot with one of his own guns in the Choctaw, Oklahoma home he shared with his wife, Karen, in June 2002. Police charged his wife with shooting him. She later pleaded guilty to beating him with a baseball bat and is serving a 3-year sentence. Police never interviewed William McDonald, the victim of the alleged crime. He did not testify in court. Police made serious errors in their investigation, including instructing Karen McDonald to clean the crime scene, failing to test the baseball bat for fingerprints, and failing to test Karen McDonald for the gunshot residue which would have been present had she actually shot her husband. The few media reports of the story portray William McDonald as a forgiving husband, but McDonald says that he has nothing to forgive, and in March filed an unsuccessful lawsuit in an attempt to free his wife. An appeal has been filed as of this week. Due to injuries he suffered resulting from the 2002 shooting, McDonald still has difficulty speaking. Carl Weston is an internet broadcaster based in Oklahoma who has been helping McDonald get the word out about his story. I spoke with him about William and Karen McDonald's case earlier today.
Karen and William, they were in the U.S. Air Force, and it was quite an interesting case because William, the husband, is the victim in the case. And apparently, from my understanding, the doctors and the hospital had the gentleman so drugged for some period of time that, you know, it was said that he would be a vegetable. And but he beat the odds, and he does have a speech impairment. He is taking speech therapy, and the bullet is actually still in his brain the night of that accident. We have assisted in filing an appeal right now up in the Tenth Circuit. It's up in Denver right now, and hopefully we'll hear something positive back about that.
So what happened on that night? William tells a different story from the police, obviously. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what William says happened on...
Well, apparently he was in bed napping or asleep, and his wife heard something outside. There's a pistol that's laying on his stomach, and apparently she took it and laid it on his stomach, and he woke up just, you know, coming. He spent some time in overseas and was on alert all the time, and of course military people have a tendency to jump up sometimes when they hear things. But anyway, she heard something outside, and he jumped up, and the gun went off, and the bullet, like I said, is still in his brain. So they make a long story short. He ended up in the hospital, and she got charged. I think the first charge was attempted murder. They dropped that, and they went ahead and charged her with assault and abuse. They didn't do powder test on the gun. And Mr. McDonald has been asking why ever since. The attorney will not get back with him. The attorney that she had refuses to cooperate, basically, and so we're gonna see how this, you know, how this case takes place.
Have you talked to anyone in anyone in Karen's family about this at all?
Oh yeah, I've talked with her mother and her brother about it and interviewed them. And, you know, they're just astounded of the system, the whys and the whys and how comes and what fors. And, you know, about approximately $60,000 later, there's no remedy. But here you have, what's interesting is the alleged victim of this shooting, whoever shot the gun, or, you know, however it went off by accident, and it makes me think, because she was apparently asleep on the couch, and, you know, when she heard something outside, which they've had numbers of reports of other situations and times of kids bothering them, harassing, knocking out windows and things like that. And if the investigation, and that's what it goes back to, Ron, is the pleas of that community did not do the proper investigation properly. If they would have spent the time and did the powder test and fingerprints and, you know, did this like it was supposed to have been done, why we have a lady that's been incarcerated that shouldn't have never been there.
Did the police ever talk to William before the plea agreement was made with his wife? Was he still...
No, apparently not, because he's been, I don't know, use the word sedated or not, but he was on some medications there for a while. And another interesting thing is, like, a few weeks before this accident, he was involved in another one, and he was on a motorcycle. So he had cuts and bruises on him from that prior accident. Now, what does the police think, you know, when they come and they see and they investigate a situation like that? They see this guy that has bruises and cuts and scratches and stuff all over him from a prior motorcycle accident. So they think that, she abused him.
Right, with a baseball bat. I read in one of the articles she admitted as part of her plea she admitted to beating him with a baseball bat. But my understanding is also that one of the police mistakes was not fingerprinting the weapon. And you're saying that he was in an accident a couple weeks before that. That would explain the bruises that she was alleged to have caused.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
I did speak with William, through emails, William earlier today. And, he's had people follow him. Of course, he's down with Karen's mother in Florida right now. And he's had people follow him around. And he did report today that he did find a piece of paper on his windshield with a note on it that... said something about give it up or something. So, you know, there's more to this than just the accident with the gun, I think.
William's already filed one lawsuit, correct, in order to, achieve freedom for his wife?
Mm-hmm.
And
get
that,
her released. Mm-hmm.
That was not successful, right?
That was not successful, and we found out that Judge Joe Heaton here in the federal courts out of Oklahoma City has botched up some other cases, and there's two other cases on appeal right now, and which he just sent up to the 10th Circuit in Denver, that appeal, which he filed on the lawyer that represented his wife. He has two, actually, right now.
Oh, what's the other one?
Well, the other one is on the police department and the cop.
And has that? When's that going to be heard?
Well, it's on appeal right now.
With Karen McDonald, how long has she been in jail for now?
I'm wanting to say 2 years at least.
So she's got at least another year left on her sentence.
I think, well, she's in what they call a halfway house, pre-release program, and I think she's up for release, and she's working right now. You know, she has a job, and they pick her up and take her to and fro. So, that is a plus, but, you know, the gal needs to be released, period. And I think that, if I remember right, that's due up in November, but we're assisting and we're, you know, fighting, doing what we can.
Has William taken any legal action against his wife's former lawyer?
Yeah, that's one of the cases that are on appeal right now.
So
originally there was one filed on the police department and the cop, and that's on appeal. And then he went ahead and filed the one on the lawyer separately, and that's on appeal. And the same judge heard both cases. So, you know, he doesn't have a very good track record right now.
You can find out more about William and Karen McDonald's ongoing story at justiceforallamericans.com. That's all for Bad Cop, No Donut this week. Feel free to send any comments or story ideas you might have. The email address for this program is ron@ckln.fm. Bad Cop, No Donut is produced at CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto and can be heard several times a week on a number of internet-only radio stations, including Upstart Radio America and Radical Radio. We'll remind you again that we are also heard in Austin, Texas on KOOP 91.7 FM. KOOP is an essential voice for the people of Austin, and they deserve your support during their fundraising drive, which continues through October 2nd. You can find out more about them at koop.org. I'm Ron Anisich, and I look forward to telling you more about the police next week.
Words from my mouth will not be acceptable by these laws. Police, them is a blasted liar and a evil man. The police, the CO, the PO, please stand up for us. The police, the police, the police, them a Babylon pestilent, y'all. Them run the street night and day and convict some innocent people. Then the jury and the judge, they conspire with all their lies. But the way them a go tell just say,
where them a go tell just say,
where them a go tell him say, where them a go tell just say, where them a go tell him say. For all those innocent people, they sent to prison and leave their family to suffer. Lightning, earthquake and fire, and convict some innocent people, then the Jews.